From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when the city of Rochester launched an effort to increase home ownership downtown. Back in 2007, city leadership created the CHOICE program, standing for Core Housing Owner Incentive Exemption. CHOICE offers a 9-year tax exemption, with the exemption declining each year. The exemptions have been available for new owner-occupied market-rate housing construction or renovation. Mayor Lovely Warren told the Democrat and Chronicle this week that she believes the program has been very, very successful. And so now the plan is to offer CHOICE to the entire city, all neighborhoods, not just downtown. The DNC reports that in 12 years, 51 housing units have been assisted in this program. Critics say that's anemic. The mayor says that's successful. The mayor said, quote, "We want to spread that out, spread the love out into the community," end quote. But critics also contend that the CHOICE program has resulted in tax giveaways to many already wealthy individuals, and they worry that the expansion could be an even bigger giveaway. So this hour, let's have a conversation about that and more. I'll welcome our guests. Rachel Barnhart is, as of, I think, a couple of hours ago, officially a member of the Monroe County Legislature. Is that correct?
That's true. I took the oath of office this morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Also with us in studio, Matthew Denker is developer with LBLD Living, Labeled Living,
yes.
It took me a couple of times.
That's okay. You're doing great.
Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Blake Giannini is a principal at FGB Property. Did I get that right, Blake?
You got it, yes.
Thanks for being here. Thank you. Blake, you're right on your microphone here.
There you go.
So, Matt, I'm going to start with you because you are not only a developer with Labeled Living, but you're someone who has used CHOICE. Is that correct?
Yes. In July, my wife and I bought one of the closed on one of the townhouses on North Plymouth Terrace.
Okay.
So very recently.
Through the CHOICE program.
Yes.
Okay. And so for you, give me a sense for how you look at whether this has been successful, whether this is the kind of model that should be expanded.
I think it should be expanded. I think it's been successful, but it's been limited. The argument that it hasn't done much is accurate. 51 units isn't much.
In 12 years, right?
It's a single Ryan Home subdivision going up in Penfield right now. You know, it's not a lot. At the same time, I think for what it has done, that it has been successful. I can't say that our project wouldn't have happened, or not our, but where we're living wouldn't have happened without the exemption, but I suspect it probably would have been a rental project instead of owner-occupied. And that's where the math really changes, because it would have been assessed differently. You know, the way Rochester assesses properties is at market rate. So, I mean, you can go look this up. We paid $350,000 for the townhouse, and we're assessed at that number because that's what we paid for it. If the developer had built the same project and rented it out, it never would have hit a public roll, and it would have been assessed like any other rental property in the area compared to other properties, and that number would have been significantly lower. It doesn't matter that it's a new build. That's only a very small increase in assessment number from a similar property for quality of the property. At the end of the day, it would have been assessed for something like half that and would have had that much less tax income from it, even being in the non-homestead rate.
Okay. Rachel, you see this in a different light. Why?
Well, Mary Lupien and I, a city council candidate, we issued a joint press release this week expressing some concerns about the proposed expansion of the CHOICE program. And that is based on what has happened in downtown Rochester in the 12 years that this CHOICE program has been in existence. We've had only 51 units constructed, and those units have been in the very high end of the market. So what we've done is we've given affluent people a subsidy to buy units in downtown Rochester. This is fundamentally unfair. Now, economists would say, well, you know, this program is paying for itself because you're getting, you're building new things and you're getting, eventually, these homeowners are going to pay their full load in taxes. But that profitability is not the only metric that we need to use as a public policy. This is not the private sector. That we're talking about government. This is the public sector. And one of our values as a democracy is fairness. Another is equity. And it's really hard to justify expanding this program when we already know, based on evidence, who it's going to help. I'll give you an example. What happens if Tom Golisano wants to build a mansion on East Avenue and he gets to pay only 10% of his taxes the first year? Well, I have to pay my full load in Beechwood. that sends a terrible message, and it really brings the legitimacy of the program into question. It's really hard for Mary Lupien and I to look around our neighborhood in Beechwood, see a number of houses that are empty and need of dire repair, see our neighbors who have roofs that need to be replaced, people who are struggling to pay their mortgages, and know that there is a segment of the community that is simply more valuable to the city than we are. And there is just a fundamental problem because of this choice program. We think that it should either be targeted or capped in some way. There should be some kind of restriction.
Restriction on value
either,
of the home?
Either, you know, capping the value. Hey, listen, if you want to incentivize building in the city of Rochester, I actually could see some incentives. But I think this is very generous. This 9-year program is extremely generous.
And by the way, when Rachel's talking about the 9-year program, the way it works is in the first year, the new homeowner has to pay 10% of taxes, so 90% exemption, and then 80%, 70% exemption, 60% until the exemption is gone. So in the 10th year, they're paying a full load, right?
Yes, and Matthew Denker and I were going back and forth on this on Facebook, and one of the things that he pointed out that is totally true is the cost of new construction. It is really expensive, but because it is so expensive, that means that the people who are able to take advantage of this will naturally be in the higher end of the market. And in fact, the city told Comita, so the city council has to approve this, so does Comita. The city officials told Comita, I was sitting in the meeting, and they said, we have 670 vacant lots in the middle to high end of the market in the city, and those are the ones that we think are going to be targeted by this program. So this is not for everyone. This program is not for everyone.
Okay, Blake, how do you see it?
I think it's difficult to discuss a single small subsidy like this without putting it in context of the whole. And many of these projects that get done have layers upon layers upon layers of subsidies on them. But to specifically say, what do I think about the choice one? I think it's good that there's a sunset on it. I also think it's important that we experiment with different ways to get people owning property downtown. In the past 10 years, it doesn't seem as though it has spurred great amounts of development. But I think it's safe to say that it would have been less than this without this subsidy. And so there would have been less than the 51 projects that you mentioned.
Okay, but let me ask you a question then. Do you view choice as a vehicle to get more people buying instead of renting, even if it's mostly high-end?
I think the number of subsidies that are available for lower and middle income people outweigh this choice program hundreds to one.
Okay,
I think a lot of people need help. I don't look at it as like a straight subsidy to a rich person. We got to define what rich is. I'm not sure how we do that exactly. With a $300,000 house doesn't seem too rich to me. Maybe a $2 million place or $1 million place is different. Where was I, Evan?
Okay, but you do make another point that I want to kick back to Rachel, and then I'm sure Matt's been waiting to kind of respond here. But Blake is pointing out that if we look at choice in a vacuum, it seems like this is the only subsidy and available help for people. And he's saying it's not. So he's saying evaluate it for what it is, not as if there is no other assistance for people. Is that fair?
So what I like about this program
is
that two things. One, it isn't a handout. Like nobody's writing these people a check. The North Plymouth Terrace project that we talked about earlier, they have to sell. And they have to sell, and the person then doesn't have to pay as much, which is it is a subsidy, but it's not, nobody's writing them a check. They are just incentivized to do this, and in the benefit is that they pay about half the amount of taxes over 10 years, and then the rest of the time they pay the full taxes. The other thing is that this is what I hope it happens from potentially expanding it, is it will continue to increase the number of projects, the new investment that happens. These are taking grass lots or a parking lot that are getting no tax money. And 10 years later, you're getting full tax money. And during that 10 years, you're not getting nothing, and you're not spending to get that. You're just not receiving some of the taxes. And those are kind of the two things that I stick to as far as me liking the program.
So it's not an initial outlay.
Correct.
On the front end.
Which is an example of, on the alternative, the first-time homebuyer tax credit currently. If you say, if you qualify, it's got to be a first-time homebuyer. If you save $300 a month for 10 months, that's $3,000, you get $15,000 in a check written to you, which is an initial outlay. This is not less being paid in taxes. This is you receiving cash. And that goes to first-time homebuyers. Mm-hmm. And I think those are very different programs.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think, Rachel?
We shouldn't be giving stuff to people who don't need it. Now, then an argument could be made that maybe these 51 units, all of them would not have been built without this program, or they would have been built in a different way, as Matthew suggested. We have evidence, though, that there have been new builds on Park Ave and East Ave, and since this program was created, that didn't get any subsidy. These were units that were $500,000 or more. Very palatial, expensive units. Now, if they were built next year, if this program is approved, and I think it will be, these buyers who would not have had to pay their full load on these new builds, those are things that would have happened anyway. And I'm sorry if we have 20 fewer condos downtown as a result of this. I don't think that's a bad thing. We need to focus our dollars on places where they are needed.
Matthew, I've heard a lot there. Go ahead.
I mean, it's really hard to argue against spending money where it's needed. I agree. At the same time, very few units have been created without the choice exemption. There's five on Park Avenue that were built with great effort.
Said spending money. This is not a spending of money. Mm. This is a not receiving of some money.
Yes, but we are a cash-strapped county and city, and not getting something means this is not distributing the tax base fairly, the tax burden fairly, I mean. So if you're not paying your full load and the other people are, that is putting the burden on other people. So it is not an outlay in that you're writing someone a check, but it is making someone else pick up the share, because we have budgets that have to be paid for in government. And if one person's not paying their full load, other people have to pick it up. And when we talked about the Midtown tax exemption, Midtown not paying sales and mortgage tax, that's money that our GRTA won't get, city, towns. That's money that people won't get and other people have to pay because we have expenses in government.
Okay, so Matt, you want to continue? Go ahead.
So I think it's important that we separate choice from other tax exemptions being given out for projects, because I support very few of those, but I do support the choice program for many of the reasons that Blake said. Going back to the Park Avenue development, because there were only five houses built without the choice exemption, there's been very little activity separate of it as well. For the last 9 years, there's been no real evidence that there was a plan to expand this to the rest of the city. So from that perspective, I don't think anyone's been sitting around waiting to do a project for this exemption to happen. So, you know, if something happens and gets it later, that's great. But it's not like there have been a pile of new condos getting built on Park Ave or on East Ave or in the South Wedge or anywhere else. That this would stimulate more construction in more neighborhoods in the city would be worthwhile, even if the number is low.
Okay, let me bring in on the phone Mary Lupien, who is running for city council and has a lot to say about this as well. And as Rachel mentioned, issued a joint press release with County Legislator Rachel Barnhart, who is on the program here. Mary, thanks for calling. How are you? Are you there, Mary? Hold on a second. Mary, here's what I'm going to do, Mary. I'm going to put Mary back on hold, and then we'll get Mary when we can get her. And as we do that, let me also let our listeners know here, because we've got phone calls piling up here. If you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. It's 263-9994. You can email the program. It's connections@WXXI.org. And we'll get as much of your feedback as we can here. Let's get Mary Lupien on the phone next. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, can you hear me now?
We can. Go ahead.
All right. So I agree with, you know, the argument that Rachel is putting forth, but I'll provide a slightly different aspect, since today is the start of international climate strikes all across the country and the world. New construction is terrible for the environment, and we're talking about giving tax breaks to incentivize the massive expenditure of the fossil fuels that it takes to manufacture and transport the construction materials required for a new build. And we're also not requiring that these new builds be energy efficient in any way, which runs contrary to the goals stated in our city's climate action plan. And one of our biggest sources of carbon emissions in Rochester is coming from these poorly insulated housing stock that we have. So I suggest instead of new construction, let's incentivize rehabbing homes that are already here and selling them to owner-occupants. And not just single-family, but multifamily too, which would also bring in responsible renters who live in the multifamily homes that they're renting to into our city neighborhoods and help someone be of lower income be able to afford that mortgage.
All right, so
Mary, focusing this tax...
Yeah, let me just jump in. Hang there for a second, Mary, because I want to kick that over to Blake, who, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, there are other programs as you see them. Mary is saying, instead of this, let's rehab existing. Let's not necessarily put the emphasis on building new. What do you think?
So that's my job, is FGP Property mentioned earlier. My brother, Jen and Cooper, shout out, they're the best, and Bill. We've fixed up maybe 75 apartments in Beechwood and around the city. Everything's in the city. Stuff that was boarded up. People had gone through it and stolen all the copper. And we did all of it without any subsidies. It wasn't always that easy. We had the right properties you can do it with. There's a lot of difficulties in buying some of the properties that you think you want to work on where they're kind of... the bank maybe owns it and it hasn't figured out how quite to sell it yet, or there's a vacant property on Rosewood Terrace, say, that used to be a duplex, but it's been vacant for whatever, 9 months, so now the city doesn't guarantee that if you buy it, it'll be a duplex again. And I think some of the money that could go, or I don't think we need to necessarily spend as much money helping these rehabs, but smooth the process. If dealing with zoning and building code, when you go in and you take a property that's been vacant for a long time, there is a tremendous amount of unknown that you go in. You cannot do enough due diligence to know that eventually you're going to find out one of the meters doesn't work in the building and our G&E is going to try to charge you $10,000 to replace a stack of meters or something. And you just can't know all of that. And I think if the building code and the zoning was smoothed out, a lot of the rehabs would go smoother without too much subsidy.
Okay, so it sounds like, Mary, though, you'd like to see more emphasis on that kind of a process as opposed to what Choice is trying to do, Mary?
I mean, so what he's talking about with zoning, that is going to be ironed out, you know, in our next iteration of the zoning code. They've already put that forth in the 2034 plan. But a lot of these rehabs do take a lot of money. I mean, if you think some of these houses that are on the rolls to be demolished, it costs the city $25,000 per house to demolish them. And if we incentivized someone to fix that up, and the way that you fix up a house to rent it is not how you fix it up to own it. So it would take more money. So I think an incentive there would be really well used.
Okay. Matt, you want to add to that too? You want to respond to that, Blake? Go ahead.
Yeah, just... I think there's an interesting kind of thought experiment you can do, and I've said this about Beechwood before because I own property there and I can name all the streets and I've walked down all the streets all the time. If they came out tomorrow and said every house in Beechwood is eligible now for $10,000 in rehabs, the value of my property just went up a lot. That subsidy trickles down to who owns it currently. And now when I sell that property, I know that the person that's going to buy it doesn't have to pay for a new roof now. And some of that value that they're trying to add to the homeowner that fixes this property up actually ends up going to being captured, we'll say, by the person that sells them the property. And that's one of my bigger beefs with the subsidy landscape in general is... if you buy a property for $1 million and then get a lot of subsidies for it, say it's a big apartment building or something like that, why did it sell for $1 million? Why didn't it just sell for less than that? And then you don't need those subsidies. And who is capturing the value of some of these subsidies, I think is an interesting topic.
Okay. Mary, some final thoughts from you there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it's the same thing with the program, the Choice program. You know, who's capturing the subsidy there? I agree with you that the homeowner would capture a lot of that subsidy, but that's a possibly middle income person as opposed to a developer, someone who could afford a $200,000 or $300,000 house. So it's talking about using the subsidy in a way that would benefit more people. But I would also say, you know, that, again, bringing it back to climate, new construction, I don't think we need to be spending there. We have so many houses that need to be fixed up that focusing a tax incentive to help speed that process up would be great. And I also want to add to your point, you know, anytime you fix up a neighborhood, housing values are going to rise, and with it, rent. But we do have to fix our aging housing stock, but we also have to make sure that we're protecting people in the neighborhoods from being displaced. And neighborhoods like Beechwood, like Blake, I know you guys both own properties in my neighborhood. Our rents have risen 20 to 30% in the last 5 years. We absolutely, no matter what we're doing to improve our city, we have to be focusing on preventing displacement. And we can do that by supporting community land trusts and instituting incentive programs for landlords to rent affordably. There are tools in our toolbox to prevent displacement.
Mary, thank you. As always, nice talking to you. I appreciate
it.
Mary Lupien is a candidate for Rochester City Council. And on that subject of displacement and even gentrification, let me grab a call from Rich, who's been waiting, who wants to weigh in on some of his concerns there. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Good. Sounds like you're in an airport hangar.
No, I'm...
Go ahead, sir.
My concern is this. First of all, one of your guests made a statement that just blew me away, that the cost of a $300,000, I think it was $300,000, isn't that high. I don't know what world he lives in, but in Rochester, that's pretty high. Also, you have a lot of people coming in from the outside, like suburbs and stuff, who have family money, who are putting down $20,000, $30,000 on houses and then buy them. They're also going to get these kind of breaks. You're going to just accelerate gentrification in the city. You're going to drive people out, and this should not be done. I'm totally against what's going on here.
Rich, thank you. So let's do this. Let me have all of our panel kind of weigh in on if this concern that Rich is expressing, which I've seen expressed elsewhere, is realistic. And that's this. The Choice Program, which, again, if you're just joining us in Rochester, it is a tax incentive to build new, primarily build, Matt Denker, renovate?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it applies to renovations, although I can't think of a single renovation. I mean, the closest would be something like
Capron Lofts, I
right,
think.
Which was an existing building and was renovated into apartments, but it was not previously apartments either. I think it would probably count for any kind of renovation.
I haven't tried.
If you're rehabbing a place, say you take my house, I live in a duplex in kind of like the Park Ave neighborhood. If I wanted to take it as part of the Choice Program, my understanding is I would have to condo out both houses, and I would still be paying tax based on my current tax basis, but any improved value.
Got it.
That would be phased in over 10 years.
Right. The point is to encourage more ownership, owner-occupied.
And investment.
And the city wants to and you get a tax incentive. So the first year, you're only paying 10% of your tax bill. The second year, you're only paying 20% all the way on up until you're finally paying, after 10 years, 100% of your tax bill. The city wants to take that to all city neighborhoods, not just downtown. And what Rich is saying is, you do that, and we're going to have further gentrification and displacement. Rachel Barnhart, you've been a critic of this expansion of Choice. Do you share that concern about it?
You could see that happen, and I really agree with Mary that this is a question of priorities. This is a question of what is good policy and where do we want to put our investments. And when we have so many problems with our housing stock, when we have so many people who are really struggling with housing issues, the citywide housing market study, which is part of the 2034 comprehensive plan, I really suggest people read that. It really paints a dire picture of the housing market in many parts of our city. So the question is, what parts of the market do we really want to focus on here, and whom do we want to help? Now, the Choice Program may not be as controversial as it is if we were doing enough to help those other places. According to the Democrat and Chronicle, only 5 houses were flipped from rehabs into nice properties that could be occupied by homeowners in the last few years. That's unacceptable. That is totally unacceptable. So I think this is sending the wrong message, and we're helping the wrong people. And I do think the Choice program is just overly generous.
Okay. Matthew Denker?
Let's go back to the displacement part.
Yeah.
Not building new properties will accelerate displacement, not slow it down. It's been shown that in neighborhoods that have less unit growth, that displacement and gentrification are higher and faster. And I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of thought exercise to work through that. I mean, at the end of the day, if my wife and I decided we wanted to move to Beechwood tomorrow, we could afford to outbid anyone for any house in the neighborhood, right? I mean, if that's just it, we just bought a townhouse downtown here. If we decided we wanted to be somewhere else in the city, we could afford to, and we could do that. If there isn't a new house there to build to take the money from us, we're going to push someone out of the house that they're in by buying it, that's something that was more affordable. And it generally works that way. You know, for better or worse, if you rolled out of bed tomorrow and said, you know what, I'm tired of this old house thing, the insulation, the draft, the whatever, gumwood isn't my thing, I really want white trim, but I don't want to paint over the gumwood. There are 90,000 houses in Rochester, and you couldn't buy a single one today that's brand new. There's not one on the market, and there's not a single one. So if you want to buy a brand new house, you're going to look at Penfield, you're going to look at Henrietta, you're going to look at Farmington, you're not going to be here in the city.
Rachel is going to just dying to jump in, but go ahead, finish the point, Matthew.
So from that perspective, doing what we can to create new owner-occupied housing in the city is valuable. I understand Mary's point about the the environmental impact of new construction. But a couple things on that point. One, the impact of new construction infill in the city is significantly lower than in the suburbs. And to any extent that we can curb demand there and have it here is worthwhile. But then also certain things like home efficiency. Based on New York State Energy Code, you're going to get there anyway. Just by building something new, the requirements on a new home that exist larger than what Rochester puts on things will push you there. A new home is absolutely going to be more energy efficient than an existing one.
Okay, Rachel.
Matthew is right. There is no question that there is demand for new housing in the city of Rochester. And for the longest time, what do we keep hearing? People want to buy condos, particularly single people and empty nesters. They want the ability to buy condos. The problem is that there aren't a lot of them. And the ones that are on the market are super duper out of range, expensive for many professionals, young professionals in particular. So the Choice program did not create a market for $80,000 condos downtown or $100,000 condos. You can't find those. So that didn't happen. And then just one more point. The people who want to buy these new builds, I would argue, aren't going to Penfield as a result. People who want to live in the city are choosing a lifestyle. We know many empty nesters are already moving downtown, as well as young professionals. They're choosing the city because they value living in the city. And people who choose to live in the suburbs are choosing that for a lot of reasons. One of them is schools, and we know that.
To a point, but at the same time, if someone could have afforded a $400,000 house and they're coming in from the suburbs and the only options, they're making a sacrifice. The only options are $200,000 houses. They're going to be pushing out someone who is in a completely different bracket than them. Someone who could afford that $200,000 house is different than someone who could afford the $400,000 house. So yes, empty nesters are moving downtown, and they are moving whether there are new houses or not. But where actual displacement is coming from is that phenomenon, that they're coming in, outbidding people for their own houses and getting the stock that we could otherwise be more affordable. And that works all the way down the chain.
But I'm going to challenge you a little bit. The Choice program just didn't create that market that you're desiring. It didn't do it.
And certainly not downtown, which I think is problematic. But I'm also think it would work better in neighborhoods than it did downtown. I think there's more opportunity for, not that there aren't infinite parking lots downtown that we could be filling in, but from the perspective of having lots that you could do small projects on and actually do something more interesting or more affordable, I think in neighborhoods it's more target worthy. Going to $100,000 condos, that would unfortunately be nearly impossible considering the cost for a unit of creating the homeowner association is on the order of $5,000 to $10,000. So right there, 10% of the cost of the $100,000 condo is going to the lawyers and the New York State Attorney General to make happen. And so you really couldn't generate a $100,000 condo in 2019, even if you wanted to, like with all of that, forget about building costs for a second, just the administrative costs of that would be so much of the $100,000.
Do you have an agreement for the first time this hour?
Oh, I think that Matthew and I agree on 99.9% of things when it comes to city living and urbanism. I think on this issue, though, I would argue that the choice program absolutely is too generous and has to be capped if we're talking about as he is acknowledging, it's really expensive to build these new units. So the question is, what should be the incentive? What is appropriate? I think paying only 10% the first year is far too generous for people who really can afford to buy these really expensive properties.
Well, so this is interesting. From a math perspective, it really is a 50% tax break for 10 years. If we gave the exact same tax break, but like that, would that change your opinion? Just out of curiosity, would that change the opinion?
No,
of it?
I think 50% tax break is a lot. I mean, I think it's a lot, and I think it's excessive. And I think that for people who are paying their full load of taxes, whether it's a modest house like I own in Beechwood or someone who lives on East Avenue and has been invested in the city for a long time, I think that's a hard pill to swallow. And here's another way to look at it. I mean, people who realize that their new neighbor who built on the vacant lot is only paying, you know, $500 this year in taxes while I'm paying, you know, $5,000, say. What happens when the city and the county have to raise taxes? What if something happens where they have to really raise taxes? All of a sudden, you know, your policy not only has some legitimacy questions today over fairness, but then tomorrow you're really going to have some arguments over the impact of this policy on different people. So I just think the fairness and equity aspect of this is getting lost. I think this is very well-intentioned policy. I think it hasn't worked very well downtown. It has potential to work elsewhere, but we really need to take into consideration who's it helping and is that fair?
All right. So let me read a statement from Carol Lee Conklin, who writes to us from her perspective the following. One important point that seems to get lost on discussions involving tax breaks is the original intent. The housing crisis of returning World War II vets was the origin of tax breaks pilot agreements. These were for affordable housing projects. During the Duffy administration, they were expanded to aid downtown development. After much discussion on council, it was okayed for encouraging downtown development. That need is no longer valid, as downtown development can be financially viable on its own. Tax abatement for affordable and subsidized development is important to address the ongoing housing crisis. Financial assistance to developers is, in effect, asking all city taxpayers to subsidize private business, end quote.
Are there any downtown developments that have not received some kind of tax break? Can any of us name one?
They all have. And I did want to make this point. I promised a couple people that I would make it before the show, and I'll be very brief. But if you look at who are the top campaign donors to both Democrats and Republicans, it is real estate interests. It is developers to both the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, as well as individual candidates. And they do get stuff in return. And I recognize that a lot of these projects are very difficult and they need help to make the numbers work. I would also add unions into this, too. The other day, I went before the building trades, and they weren't too happy with me about my position about Midtown. Well, the building trades, it turns out, has someone on Comita who voted for this because they're concerned that these tax breaks will take away construction jobs. So, you know, Mary and I might be the only two people who speak out about this. I know the Green Party has some folks who are concerned as well, but a lot of people don't speak out about this because they're deeply incentivized not to.
Well, to Rachel's point about developers give money to political campaigns and they, quote, get stuff for that. The last time the mayor of Rochester was on this program was July of 2017. She was running for re-election. I asked her about the developer contributions to both her campaign and her PAC. She was deeply offended by that, told me so on the air, has not returned since, and she said that she wants campaign finance reform, but she would never be swayed, even though developers have given generously to her. And she is offended by the insinuation. It's one of the reasons, by the way, no one from city administration is on this program today right now, because the mayor does not participate on Connections since that interview. And so let me just at least say from her perspective, Rachel, she said that's baloney, at least for her.
Every politician says that of every party who gets campaign donations. They say that it doesn't sway them. The amount of money we are talking about is pretty extraordinary locally, that real estate interests, they by far outweigh any other interests. Even I think they definitely give more than even unions do. So there's huge incentive for politicians to want to maintain good relationships with developers because they do get money in return, money that helps them stay in office. I am not in any way suggesting that that's why the the choice program exists right now, but I am saying that it's a factor, and we do have to always look at who's really benefiting from these policies. And I think that we all agree that we want more people to move into Rochester. We want more people. We want more development. We want to increase the tax base. But I do think we have to do it in a fair and equitable way, in a way that is sensitive to the needs of all segments of our community.
All right, real quick before we go to break here, and then we're going to take phone calls for the rest of the hour. Do we have a good sense for what a goal should be on owner-occupied, whether it's downtown or all across the city? Because the number downtown, at least, is very small, right, Matthew Denker, owner-occupied?
Incredibly.
4 to 5%?
Yeah, it's very small, yeah.
I mean, is there a goal that we have? I don't know how it compares to other cities. I guess the answer is more, is generally speaking.
I honestly don't know, and I'm not sure anyone tracks that. It's not a number I've spent time looking into too much. I mean, there's got to be a sense that some other cities have more owner occupancy in town, you know, that there are more condos in Manhattan kind of thing than there are
sure.
in other places. But as a percentage, I doubt downtown home ownership is high in
any
city.
No, it's very low. And I mean, home ownership citywide is about 33%. We like people to get in homes because it's a significant source of wealth. And so in some cases, it's the only source of wealth for some families is what they have invested in their homes. So this has always been the American way. There are some economists who think that it needs to change, but there are very significant reasons why we want people to have a home owner investment in the city of Rochester.
If you're just wondering, Staten Island has the highest home ownership rate of the five boroughs down in New York City, 62%. In Staten Island, you said Rochester citywide's around 33%?
Yeah.
Okay. Ownership rates go all the way down in Manhattan, 25%, the Bronx, 22%. But I mean, obviously, that's New York City. It's different in a lot of different places. The goal has just been more in Rochester. Choice has been designed to do that. Rachel Barnhart, a county legislator and a city resident, saying it's simply helping people who already don't need the help.
And it didn't work downtown. Now, would it work in the neighborhoods? Matthew thinks it'll work a lot better in the neighborhoods. I think it could, but we're talking about the very high end of the market that would be juiced here.
All right, so let's get our only break of the hour since we're way late for that, and we'll come back more with Matthew Denker, developer with Labeled Living, and one of the first 51 in the first 12 years that we know of to benefit from Choice. Blake Giannini is a principal at FGB Property. Rachel Barnhart is a member of the Monroe County Legislature and a city resident. Let's get that break and come back to your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we talk about screen time and raising kids in the digital age. How much screen time is too much? How can we create and model good habits for kids? Devorah Heitner is the author of ScreenWise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's going to be in town as a guest at the Harley School. First, she joins us on Connections, talking about tech-positive parenting. This is Connections. Mark emails the program and says, Evan, didn't we just have this conversation? Wasn't it about Midtown? Rachel Barnhart was on this program last week talking about tax breaks for Midtown, which Midtown Athletic Club got through Comita. Do you see any analog here with Choice?
Well, yes, because we have to look at when we do these incentives, who are the incentives benefiting? And another question, are they necessary? Would this have happened anyway? I think Matthew is right that this is a little bit of a, when you're talking about housing, this is a different conversation because the policy has different goals. But there are some things that are similar.
And there's a Comita component here. Go ahead.
There is, because if the city wants to offer this property tax break, that the county has to sign on to it as well, because people have to pay county property taxes. So this policy needs the approval from city council, and it needs the approval of the IDA.
I've been telling Jesse Sleaser in Monroe County that I've been trying to train myself to call it Imagine Monroe. It's still
I can't do it either.
It's still Comita to me. So let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Willa next. Willa Powell. Hi, Willa. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for taking my call. So I would challenge you to find a financial planner or an accountant to come on your show and describe whether there's a single occasion where someone would be advised to make a decision to build downtown based on this choice tax incentives. I don't think that it would produce that the incentive itself produces any incentive that isn't already there, that people who are making the choice to build and live downtown We're going to do that without the tax incentive. And God bless those 51 who managed to, you know, recoup some of their building costs from this choice program. The thing is, expanding it out to the rest of the city, as Rachel said, would only shift the burden onto those of us who already have property and who are already paying a full assessed value. The real nuanced aspect of this, though, is we're up against our constitutional taxing authority and, along with it, up against our limit as to how much debt the city can incur. Now, when the city uses up its debt, its borrowing authority, it's basically throwing it away. But the school district, when it is allowed to borrow against some of that borrowing authority, we recover 98 cents out of every dollar to state aid. When there's no money to borrow, then there's no upgrades to our schools, and there is no money coming back into this community. You know, when the city school district borrows, that's essentially like an economic engine. That's not true of cities borrowing, because they can only borrow once for a project and be done. When the school district borrows, the money starts flowing back again. That's M1, M2 economics at work.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask our guests what they make of this analysis. As always, Willa, thanks for that. Matthew Denker, what do you think of that analysis there?
I mean, Rachel said it best. The goal here is not necessarily to make money or not make money on one of these things as government. At the same time, we've talked about it, and the math kind of shows that this tax break is probably profitable, that it probably brings in more money in taxes over the course of the lifetime of a building than it cost to give it. So I don't know that that's the right argument against it. You know, I'm sympathetic to other arguments about it, fairness, whatever, capping it. But I don't think the argument that it's somehow costing money we don't have is a good argument.
Which I think was Blake's argument. There's not an initial outlay up front. And if you take something that doesn't exist and you're getting nothing in tax revenue, and then you create something, even if it's at a lower rate for 10 years, that is a plus on the government ledger side. Is that?
Yeah, I think some of the where the arguments butt up against each other are, would it have happened anyway? And I don't know if we'll ever know. I think it's very safe to say it would not have been more than 51 units if the program didn't exist, just because it is an incentive. I mean, there is an economic incentive to do it, and it still only created 51 units. I'm not sure what our policy as a city should be, as city residents, of how much we want to encourage people to own homes downtown. It does seem to me like we are low on the totem pole at 4% we were talking about. I don't know what it should be, but if we are shooting for a number higher than that, we're going to have to do something.
Okay, Rachel?
Well, that's always the threat from developers. We're going to pick up our ball and go home if you don't give us XYZ. And, you know, you really have to step back and say and maybe take those risks. I think that in this case, it's easier to say that these high end units. I mean, Charlotte Street is a good example. Charlotte Street home leasing built a number of townhouses that I believe were sold for $400,000 and up. Oh, Matthew wants to say something.
No, they built 10. Sorry.
Okay.
It's,
yep.
Yeah, it's 10 units. Yeah.
Well, 10. So, and I believe they're about $400,000 and up. And those people who could afford those are in this program. And I think we have to, people who bought those really want this lifestyle. They want those townhouses. And I would argue that the price of the condos would probably was distorted by this tax break. And someone would have bought those condos. And I think you have to step back and say, how much is too much? And the choice program was too much. This is just overly generous when you look at the cost of what these things cost, what the prices. If you can afford a $400,000 townhouse downtown, you can afford to pay a little more in taxes.
And so here's just a procedural question on how it works from James. because as a reminder, if you just joined us, the choice incentive is a 90% tax break in the first year, 80% in the second year, all the way down until you're paying 100% in the 10th year. James says, what happens if a buyer that buys a home with choice sells 5 years in? Do they have to pay the taxes subsidized back to the city, or is it lost money for the city or county?
I think it transfers.
Yeah, the next person gets 5 years of tax break at 60, 70, yeah. 80, 90.
Because they would
units,
be an owner.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And I've seen units advertised that way. Look, there's no question that we want to fill in vacant lots with buildings that are paying higher taxes. And the theory behind all of this, that if it takes a little bit longer, that's okay because the city will ultimately benefit. But again, profitability shouldn't be the only metric. Government is not just a business. I mean, private prisons are also profitable. That's not the only thing that we're trying to do here. We're also trying to look at whether this is legitimate, whether this is fair. And that's a much harder question. I just would like us to have this conversation as we talk about expanding the program.
Let me get back to your phone calls and Bonnie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Hello. I lost my connection there. A lot of things have already been said, and I totally agree with the fairness issue. And just as an introduction here, this is a third person from a third party speaking. I live in the city. I live in the northeast part of the city. I live in the northeast part of the city. And if you do a lot of walking and you go, you know, lower income neighborhoods, and there's more of them than people probably realize, you see not necessarily houses all falling apart, but what you see is direct signs of houses that are going to be 100 years old next year. Many of the homes will be that old in the 2020 period. And so you can see that they have beginnings, and even more than just beginnings, of repairs needed. We're talking hundreds of houses. I don't know what the plan is to keep to address that. There needs to be a plan, whatever it takes. If it means more public money and somebody has to pay who has more money that needs to pay more taxes, we can't just keep leaving this go and acting like somehow they're either going to get younger as the houses get older or what. But the problem is we don't have enough public money in the system, wherever it is, city, this city or another city, to do what is needed. We need to turn the process around. The other thing that would be helpful is if we had more things like worker-owned co-ops, we could maybe have some of those in neighborhoods that would be people who know how to do and could be, you know, on some kind of sliding scale paid for helping with some of these relatively small to medium repairs that need to be done. So let's start changing the conversation. We don't need to have more rich people get richer. We need everyday people to have more of a place to go and a place that they feel they can feel like they're valued.
All right, Bonnie, thank you for that. So Bonnie is talking about what Blake has mentioned, and some of what you do in your business is rehabbing homes, and she says that the need is on the scale of hundreds and that there should be more emphasis there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of houses. If you drive down a street that's in particular need of rehab or maintenance, you'll notice like blue tarps on the roofs is a good giveaway that there's something wrong at that place. Or like even you can see a tree that's like leaning up against a roof or something like that. And it can be real bad at times, like entire blocks that that just like visually from the outside, it looks like there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done.
And Rachel, what Bonnie's saying is government ought to be doing something about that.
Government has to do something about it because the private marketplace cannot. Matthew will go through all the numbers, and Blake knows the numbers really well. Some of these homes, you have to put so much money into them that they'll never, ever get sold for the amount of money that it takes to rehab these properties.
Agree with that?
Yeah, that's largely the problem. I mean, Rochester has 90,000 units of housing, and I think 90% of them are more than 40 years old now. I think it's right around that number. So, yeah, it's certainly an issue.
All right.
So I'm more optimistic in the private industry, if I could have 1 second. I think there's – go ahead.
Well, I mean, if it cost me $50,000, $70,000 to do massive repairs, restructuring of a house that could never sell – for the cost I'm putting into it, where's the optimism you have come from?
Well, I think some neighborhoods are in a lot of trouble. I think that there's some neighborhoods, Beechwood specifically is one I spend a lot of time on, where there's a lot of houses that are in trouble. But I think they can be saved. I think smoothing out of the zoning process, as I said earlier, smoothing out of the building code process on fixing these properties up would go a very long way in helping people like me and people that go in and do the work themselves and flip the house, and it would go a very long way.
You heard Mary Lupien, who's running for city council, saying that is on council's agenda to address some of those issues that Blake is talking about there. And so as we wrap the hour here, you know, Rachel was joking that she and Matthew agree on almost all things urbanism, and they're very much friends and we respect each other, but you haven't been fully swayed on this one. Why do you still think expanding choice works?
No, I really think it will. I mean, and especially from the perspective of getting some of this money has to accrue to developers the way the program works. Because at the end of the day, if I went and built myself a new house, I bought a lot in Beechwood, I built myself a new house, it doesn't matter what it costs, I'm going to get assessed based on all the other houses because I never bought and sold it. It has to be a sale because of the way the assessment works in Rochester, that it's assessed at full market value, which is what it sells for. So the city doesn't actually get any taxes from me if I go build a house and move into it myself. It has to be set up to some degree to incentivize one person to build a house and then sell it to somebody else. It's the only way that this process works. Now, we could try and change how assessments work, but that's a whole other argument.
That sure, certainly is. I want to thank our guests for taking the time to be here. Matthew Denker is a developer with Labeled Living. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Blake Giannini, a principal at FGB Property. Thank you very much for being here. Rachel Barnhart, recently sworn in just this morning, officially a member of the Monroe County Legislature and a resident of the city of Rochester. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for doing this, Evan.
And our thanks as well to Christine, volunteering. Thank you very much. In fact, volunteering of the yearing for us. Thank you. Our thanks to Megan Mack, who is the producer and the engineer today, because she does it all. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.